folks.
We're back.
We never left.
I did. I went to get some scotch. Oh, that's nice. I should finish my red wine first. my flatmate got Vanessa a 4-pack of the cheapest, nastiest sort of 700ml cans of scotch and coke that he could find at the bottle of one night. Said, here you go, love. You live in Beenleigh. You should drink like one. You got to drink all four tonight.
So he's like sleeping out of the house with the dogs, is he, I hope?
Vanessa drank them. She loves cheap and nasty scotch.
Oh.
I've got to hide my good stuff because she'll fucking put coke in it, I'll tell you. She will. If there's nothing else there, I'll have good, like, you know, 12-year-old single malt, like, beautiful, smooth, peaty scotch, like, and she'll go, oh, I'll whack a bit of coke in this.
And come to it and go, this is nasty shit. I just want Southern comfort. Oh, Jesus.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, well,
we know she's got bad taste, mate. That's how she ended up with you.
Yeah, that's true. Let's start with Lana Del Rey.
Well, I was going to say, we should start with the number one album in Australia.
Is this the number one album in Australia?
It's her third consecutive number one album. Like, every album that she's released has got number one, including this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the best album in Australia this week that was selected by Mr. Beasley, I'd like to point out. John Beasley suggested we should listen to this album.
So, her last album, which was called
I did see it, and I can't remember what it was called.
Ultraviolence.
Unrelated to the content.
Yes. I don't know. It's unlikely, calling it listenable. I don't dip my toes into sort of popular media. So if something is, you know, killing it everywhere, I'm not really going to pick up that it is. I don't know where I stumbled onto that album, but I really liked the last album. I don't know why.
What did it do? What about it was interesting?
Well, this is the thing. I presume
the big single off that was West Coast, which is the one I've heard a lot of. And I don't hate West Coast. It's got an interesting leading kind of bass line that leads you into the song, and then it doesn't really work, and then it comes back and it starts working again.
I was trying to figure out the other day what I was doing at the time. Just, you know, because sometimes you just, an album grabs you at a certain point. Ketamine, yes, maybe.
Paint thinners? Fuck. What were you doing at the time?
Because I listened to this album and I was like, it's just not doing it for me.
Now, was this the album that you listened to and that you immediately said on Twitter, I now want to, what was the line? It wasn't positive. It was sort of like, I need to disinfect myself. It just wasn't popular in any way, shape, or form.
No, that was not the album that I commented about.
Foreshadows no, lately. Oh, so it was. It was what I thought it was.
Definitely not. No, this was just, I don't know. I mentioned it to someone else and they sort of went, well, you know what the trick is now. Like, she's sort of a one-trick pony, and this album is exactly the same as her only other stuff, this sort of melancholy, vocal, slow.
You know what it is? So the thing about young Lizzie, Lana, as she goes these days, is that she's a rich girl from New York who's decided she wants to be interesting and arty. And it's confusing being obscure with being arty. It's just oral narcolepsy. I was actually at a standing desk when I listened to this, and I almost fell asleep like a cow. You know how they fall asleep standing up and people push them over? I thought someone was going to tip me. What it reminded me, I used to have a flatmate. It was a tremendous dude. But he loved Tori Amos, and he listened to a lot of Tori Amos, and he played it loud. And over the years, this was sort of 98, 99, I heard a lot of Little Earthquakes, and I heard a lot of Boys for Pele. This
she's got a bit,
Lana
bit more
Del Rey sounds like the Costco brand Tori Amos.
Yeah,
she's like a cheap ripoff. Whereas Tori Amos' stuff is annoying, but it's at least informed by her personal experience, which is not pleasant. I mean, she's gone through a lot of nasty shit. Whereas Lana Del Rey's experience is that she was a little rich girl who went to art school and decided to write profound lyrics like "All I want to do is get high on the by the beach, get high by the beach, get high. All I want to do is get high by the beach, bye bye baby, baby bye bye." It's basically Katy Perry with better PR. I actually felt like, you know, I'm not paid that much by the hour, but I almost felt like sending you an invoice for the hour that I spent. It really is music to fucking neck yourself to.
And this is your Royal Headache moment, isn't it?
No, I'd much rather listen to Royal Headache. The funny thing is that, as you know, I'm too cheap to pay for premium Spotify. So every sort of 20 minutes or so, they fire in an ad. And they fire in an ad for some terrible cock rock thing that John Stevens is doing. And it woke me up. I've realized that I'd actually fallen asleep. Oh, woman! It was like shitty fucking Wolf Mother ripoff. So that was. She actually reminds me. Do you remember "Common People" by Pulp? They're talking about this terrible rich art school girl who wanted to hang out with common people to sort of see what they were like, and she's just an insufferable dickhead. That's basically the feeling I get about Lana Del Rey, is that she's doing an impression of somebody who's interested in that sort of stuff. Also, Lana Del Rey is an anagram of "your anal lad," so that's fair enough. Good to know. Music to fucking neck yourself too. I give you no stars at all, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I've got no comeback. No comeback at all.
No, look, it was a roll of the dice. I'm not going to hold that against you.
No, like, because I genuinely enjoyed that other album. Yeah, I did. I really liked it, but I didn't like this. I didn't.
No, it just wasn't. It just didn't. It just, no. It was. Yeah, I challenge anyone to listen to that and say, fuck, I enjoyed that. Because it is soporific. It is narcoleptic. It sends you to fucking sleep. It makes you wish that you were dead. And I don't understand, unless you're seriously addled on some kind of chemical downer, unless you've been injecting ketamine into your ball sack, I don't understand why you would enjoy that music.
Let's move on to The Prodigy.
Well, that's exactly the order in which I listened to them. And after Lana Del Rey, The Prodigy was like a shot of adrenaline to some fucking comatose heart patient on the deck. It was like just being kick-started. It was like, it reminded me a little bit of that, the story behind "Kickstart My Heart," that Motley Crue song, which was about Vince Neil, I think, had some drug overdose, and he went into ER and they fired him up with the adrenaline and the defibrillators.
Adrenaline
and
the heart.
They kickstarted his heart! Yeah! Yeah, and that's what this Prodigy album actually felt like. It felt like somebody had plugged, after I was sort of this limp kind of Thunderbirds puppet propped up at my desk, the Prodigy album just came in and I just suddenly went, fuck, I'm awake and the world's a brilliant place. Let's go. Let's fucking throw some shapes. And it was all Keith after that. It was just Keith Flint. It was throwing shapes. It was Big Fish, Little Fish cardboard box. It was high energy fucking dance music in it. It was going off. It was fucking nasty.
I've been sitting on this album for a while, and the reason that I have...
It's got pointy edges, it'll go up your ass!
...is because I was... with old bands that you loved sort of, you know, in your youth, in your formative years, you were always worried when they bring out, you know, an album 20 years past their prime that it's going to be a bit shit. You know, like bands that you really loved, that can happen.
You worry that they're going to change their sound and they're going to go off, and this is our Christian rock period. You know,
yeah. Or you know, they're something completely different, but they've still got the name, so they're going to release it under that name.
Yeah, they've dropped like four. Like, there's only one person. It's only the original drummer or something.
Yeah, but this is a proper prodigy.
This is what they have not changed at all. They have not changed. They have never changed. They never will change. They are the prodigy. This is what they do. Yeah. And by fuck, this was fun.
Part of it
was because I listened to Lana Del Rey immediately beforehand, but it was so much fun. I had my coworkers come into my office saying, "Can you stop drumming?" Because I was literally just fucking caning it off shit.
Yeah.
Just fucking throwing shapes in me fucking office, you bastards.
However,
I will say,
if you go back and
Ibiza! What is he doing?
That is a funny track. That is a very funny track. This is really good, but you go back and listen to Fat of the Land.
Sorry, you run. You go.
Yeah, if you go back and listen to Fat of the Land and then listen to this, the difference is that they are, you can tell that they're making good music, and it is really, really good music, and it's the same sort of music that it was making, but they've lost the edge of menace that they had in Fat of the Land. Like, their vocal delivery, their beats, it's all a little bit more grown up. It's not as angry as it was when they were younger.
They're comfortable.
It's much more comfortable. It's still awesome.
I mean, Keith owns a fucking motorcycle team.
Yeah.
He has disposable income.
That's right. It's like, hey, we still really like making music and we might as well let everybody else listen to it. But if you go back and listen to Fat of the Land, there's an angry edge. Yeah, there's a hunger to it, to their music that is really cool. But this is, they still can write a beat. This is a really good dance album. And it is, you could play Wild Frontier or Get Your Fight On.
Get Your Fight On is probably my favorite song.
Yeah, I think Wild Frontier would be mine. But if you played either of those tracks to anyone, they would say, "Oh, you know, is that a Fat of the Land?" You know, they would think that is an old school Prodigy song.
Wild Frontier is a good track. Actually, there's a lot of good stuff on that album. I listened to it again without listening to the Lana Del Rey album first, just to make sure it wasn't just by comparison. It felt good, and it was good. I felt like going back and listening to other tracks subsequently. So I think about Ibiza. What's he fucking doing? It sounds like a swearier version of Park Life.
It's like a companion piece to Park Life, isn't it? And I think Ibiza really fits into that narrative of being older and more comfortable in what they're doing, but just having a bit of a laugh. You know, it's almost like a funny song. They would never write a funny song when they were younger.
Yeah.
Vanessa, the X-Trail, the battery went flat, and for some bizarre reason, Nissan put passcode locks on their stereos.
They do too, which is fucking annoying.
Yeah, the battery went flat. So the radio comes back up with the passcode, put the passcode in, wouldn't work. Fuck. So this is like, I don't know, 2 months ago. Pulled the stereo out to make sure that it was the right one. Yes, everything ended up. I was going to take it back into Nissan this week for them to have a look at. And Vanessa's been hassling me about this because she likes to listen to music or the radio on the way to work. And for some reason, I was taking the boys out this morning and I put the passcode in before I drove off. And 15 minutes into the drive, the stereo starts working. So I thought, when I come home, I'll let Vanessa know that the stereo's working. So I put the windows down, drove down the driveway with this just absolutely blaring out the windows. And she didn't twig. She's like, "Oh, I heard you coming." And I'm like, "Yes, your stereo is fixed."
Yes.
But it was I didn't play that one because I had the kids in the car. But big fat beats coming out of the speakers. It was very cool.
Because it was Stuff Shoulder who said that he was playing that album for his kids, his 4-year-old. I was thinking, you're not playing that fucking song. What's he fucking doing?
Yeah, there's two. There's that one and Wall of Death that are a bit sweary.
Yes. But that's it's good. It's just good fun. It's almost like It's almost like punk rock. It's the punk rock version of dance music.
Yeah.
And it's just got such great energy and it's fun and it just you can't not, and I'm not an electronic dance music person by any stretch of the imagination, but
I just
that stuff is fun. It's just fun. You can't say no to that sort of stuff.
Well, one of the things I thought we might do for the end of the year was one of the end of the year shows is go through all the albums that we've listened to this year and do a top three or a top five sort of
the year. I think that's a good idea.
The new albums, like go back and re-listen to some of the, you know, the ones, because we listened to a lot of new music this year.
Well, we can make a call for the best album of the year for sure.
Far more than I would think, you know, even most young people would listen to.
Ironically, the best album I've probably heard this year, we didn't listen to on this because it wasn't on Spotify, but it's the John Spencer Blues Explosions new album.
Mm. And is it on Apple Music?
It might be, but it wasn't on Spotify. But it is cracking. It's called No Wave Dance Party or something like that. Freedom Tower, No Wave Dance Party. It's fucking just cracking. It's really good. It's a real, I'm not going to say a return to form because they never really lost their form, but it's a really good album. Oasis. I'm getting the feeling that this is the album you didn't quite get through that particularly well.
Tell me why this is a classic album.
Tell me why it's not. Given the fact that I no longer respect your views on music after selecting Lana Del Rey, explain to me why you had a problem with this album.
This is probably not the best week for me to tee off on your classic album.
Go on.
They are whiny little bitches. That's why. Seriously, his voice is just like.
And you can't get beyond the vocal.
No, I couldn't. Could not get beyond the vocal.
Well, going to be your problem for the rest of time. The Bollards, as the dude from the Auteurs would say, are definitely the weakest part of the album.
Slide Away and
Live Forever. I think they're pretty weak. But the rock and roll songs are fucking awesome.
If you could give me this as an acoustic album, I'd love it. Instrumental. Yeah, great album.
So awesome.
Awesome music, but cannot get past his voice.
You can't get past Liam.
No.
Well,
it just felt like I have three kids going rah, 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 in my head all day. I don't need to fucking listen to it, with music behind it. Because that's what it sounded like, my twins screaming when they weren't happy. Oh, Jesus. It just did my head in. I really struggled to get through this album. Just his voice just did me. Couldn't do it. Listen to the whole thing. I listened to it again, but, like, I've never been a massive Oasis fan because of that voice. Like, even when Wonderwall sort of really broke and became a big thing, I was like, really? Flat nasal singing? Is that a great track? I don't get it.
I think Noel might have a better voice. And that's kind of the odd thing about Oasis. Noel did those couple of Chemical Brothers tracks.
Yeah, I was going to say, Let
Forever Be and Setting Sun. Though he's not really singing on them. He is more, he's not as whiny. He's kind of this kind of scowling prick. I think that kind of works better. I don't mind because whenever I listen to music, I listen to the guitar first and the vocal second.
Yeah.
That's why I like Shaker Maker, I fucking love. Even though the lyrics are cretinous bullshit, they're basically just lines lifted from ads. It's built off a 12-bar blues progression, and that has always, since I was just a young bloke, a 12-bar blues progression has always spoken to me. I don't really understand why, but it's always been something that hits me very primally. The cigarettes and alcohol, it's like they were... it's almost like a muse-like lifting of somebody else's technique. It's T-Rex. It's pure T-Rex.
Oh, I really like T-Rex.
Yeah. So that's a fun riff, but I understand that the the lead singer can be annoying, as Noel found out for himself when he decided to fuck off and form his own band.
I was actually listening to a bit of live that Chemical Brothers did. So Apple Music run a sort of big live music festival that they stream out, and most of it's terrible, terrible pop music. But
yeah,
they do it. They do a couple of good bands, and I was like listening
Taylor
to
Taylor Swift. We're still Ryan Adams covering Taylor Swift.
One Direction was one of their headliners, and I'm like,
yeah. No erections.
But yeah, I was listening to the Chemical Brothers live set and listening to Let Forever Be, and I was like, oh, this is just a cracking song. It's a great song.
It is. It's a good song.
I think, and if you put Damon Albarn in the vocalist.
That's an interesting call, and I understand where you made that one.
As the vocalist for that, this album, I'd probably really, really like it. But I just, I couldn't move past the vocal. And I thought, Doc's going to be so pissed at me for not being able to, like, sort of
zone out the vocal. We are not going to agree on all our classic albums. That's not possible. We're not the same people.
Mm.
Would you at least accept that the songs are less annoying than the Beatles fucking remix?
Oh yeah.
They went into the second and third and fourth albums.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes.
Although I should say that one of my favourite Oasis songs is actually, and if you haven't heard this, you should probably look into it. It's a song called "Fucking in the Bushes," and why it's good is that Liam doesn't sing.
Yeah,
it's instrumental. Right. It's almost like Noel's been hanging out with Chemical Brothers for too long. And it's literally just kind of a rock electronica thing with samples.
Yeah.
And there's a sample. It was the lead song off their 2000 album, which wasn't very good, but it was really good. The track itself was really good.
It's really good.
Young people running around naked, fucking in the bushes. That's the sample they use.
Dear. Yeah, Wonderwall just like you go back and listen to it now, it killed everything. I don't actually think it's a very good song, but
I don't quite understand why. It's a bit like Outkast, Hey Ya. I don't really understand why that song was so important to so many people. I don't get it.
It's a catchy pop song, but it's not.
I don't understand why it was the end of the world for people. I don't understand why. I mean, I understand that. Yeah, exactly as you say, it was. Yeah. You know, it's a reasonably well structured pop song, but I don't understand why it's so significant to everybody.
And the album is actually a lot deeper and a lot more idiosyncratic than that song.
Because Bomani Jones is a sports guy from ESPN who's also was a music critic before he became a sports guy. And he's a dude I follow on Twitter and listen to his podcast and so on. And he spent a lot of time in Atlanta, and that's where Outkast are from. And he always talks about Outkast being this incredibly important act in his, when he was at college and going through uni and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I only sort of associate them with Miss Jackson and fucking Hey Ya, and thinking these guys are like a fucking shit house novelty act and they can fuck off. I never really understood what it was they were doing that was so significant.
That they are really, really crazy talented band though,
but I'm not. Where is it that their talent is being demonstrated?
Have a look at. They did a movie called I can't remember. Can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. But they did this movie, wrote the movie, wrote all the music for the movie, and the music is actually like, 50s or 60s sort of club swing music. I don't know how you'd explain it. But yeah, they are crazy talented musicians. I agree. I don't think that they're sort of as influential as they're held up to be. Like the guys that I find that are sort of the ones pushing the boundaries of the Roots, who don't get a lot of love in the American hip hop community. Don't know whether it's because they're the house band for one of the American late night shows.
I think the problem is that they might be seen as having sold out to Whitey, because they are Jimmy Fallon's house band, and Jimmy Fallon is as white as they get. I mean, he is
The story behind that, though, don't you?
That Jimmy Fallon sucked all their dicks? I don't know. What's the story?
No, like quite a few of the band all sort of had kids at the same time, and they were kicking. They were mates with him, or there was some sort of circumstance that they were all sort of sitting around having a chat to him at a particular stage, and they're sort of like, well, we're getting sick of having to tour constantly to sort of make our living. We've all got young kids. We'd all like to be home a lot more than what we are. And Fallon was like, well, I'm just about to take over this Tonight Show. Why don't you come and be my house band, and I'll pay you to be my house band, and you can live in the same city for.
Oh, it's a wonderful solution for them.
Yeah, but live in the same city for 9 months.
You can't pretend to be at the cutting edge of artistic credibility if you're, in that position, because you're not. You are the epitome of having sold out to corporate interests, because you literally have sold out to corporate interests.
Yeah. And they're the sort of like
and you're not willing to struggle anymore. You just want to get paid. Cool. Yeah. Good on you. I don't blame you. But however, that's what comes with the territory.
YouTube some of their intros and some of the covers that they've done, or not covers, but like backing some of the classic artists. And man, Fallon is so lucky to have them as their house band. There,
but Paul Schaefer's band, in the old Dave Lehman days, they were fucking good. They were a really good band.
Well, the band on the the band that Schaefer puts together at the end of the second Blues Brothers movie, that goes up against the Blues Brothers band, and the Blues Brothers band is actually like an actual proper touring, proper
it is the band that they took out on tour when they were the Blues Brothers, because they actually tour. They did live shows.
Yeah, and that John Schaefer
Belushi
band is
and Ilaris them, yeah.
Yeah, that was that. Those guys are really, proper musicians. But anyway, so what new music have you got for me this week?
Well, firstly, I want to talk about something that I saw on the internet that worried me a lot.
Sure.
I saw a young lady, and I follow some young ladies on the internet, because if I followed them in real life, I'd get arrested.
Yes.
But a young lady was tweeting about the fact that her parents were angry that she was wearing a T-shirt. The T-shirt said, "Good dick imprisons you."
Yes.
Good dick imprisons you. And I was thinking about this concept of that good dick imprisons you. I was like, how does good dick imprison someone? Is it like the bars on the jail? I mean, is it like made of dick? I'm not quite sure how this works. Oh, what about substandard dick? Does it just sort of take you in for questioning and then release you on bail? I mean, how does this work? I don't really understand how this is. So I also have issues, much like the young lady's parents. This has nothing to do with what we were talking about, but...
Yes, I'm wondering where this is going.
Anyway. Also, Ryan Adams covering Taylor Swift.
Oh, jeez.
I don't understand why this is a big deal, because Ryan Adams is irrelevant and Taylor Swift is kind of Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Why is it I follow too many feminists who get angry about the fact that Ryan Adams is covering Taylor Swift and getting allegedly more coverage for it.
Oh,
I don't think he is.
There's no such thing as more coverage than Taylor Swift owns
Taylor
popular
Swift
media.
Is the internet.
Yeah.
No, they should just call it the Swift-inet.
She is one of those amazing people that sort of is very, very popular and has a massive following in pop culture, but then is also very popular in sort of an indie space, which is the feminist space.
Which is bizarre because what she's producing is just shit.
And
what she's producing is just corporate shit.
Yeah, she's a corporation.
Yeah.
But I do like what I do with all commercial stuff. I just ignore it. Yeah. So I just really don't care. I'll
go back to the fact that a corporation was stupid enough to name her clothing brand TS 1989 and send it into China, and that was really quite effective. New music. I'm going so this week I'm going completely new, as in bands that are new to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going new Aussie band and a new Kiwi band. Keep it trans-Taz.
Yeah,
I'm picking a new Kiwi band called Villainy. I think this is their second album. I can't remember the name. I should remember it because I did write it down, but I don't have it with me. But so their new album, I've heard a bit of some of their stuff on YouTube, but apart from that, they sound like they could be fun. They're getting a little bit of air over here, which is kind of cool. And the other band I was going to pick is purely off the recommendation of Dr. Lindsay McDougall of the internet, formerly of Triple J, formerly of Friends of Rom, who said, you should listen to this band. My brother's in it. And they're called Ivan Drago. And apparently they sound a bit like old sort of 90s punk acts like NoFX and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
They're called Ivan Drago. They've got a very, I saw their album cover is kind of very kind of Russian propaganda style thing.
Boxing glove holding a beer with a star coming out of it.
That sounds perfect. So Ivan Drago and Villainy. We're going for a couple of new Aussie and Kiwi bands, and we'll see what comes of that.
Mm. Nice. Yeah, that looks very funny. That's a funny one. I haven't been able to find Villainy yet, but that might be just my spelling.
Oh, well, if it's not on there, it's on something else. And if it's not on there, I'll pick something else. That's cool.
Or it'll be on YouTube or Apple Music. We'll find it.
Yeah, it's been getting a bit of heat from Hauraki, which is the local kind of indie rock station, if you like. Kind of the commercial Triple J. So I'll be surprised if they're not in there.
So the classic album. This is one I've
Def
sort
Leppard,
of
been, yeah?
No, we're not that far into the
Maroon 5
into the problems yet. No, I'm you might actually think that it's not that far off those.
So I figured that you'd be picking Boats because the new Freddy's wasn't that far away. Boats as in based on a true story.
I probably. No, not yet.
But I think you're more of a fan of am I right in thinking you're more of a fan of Matterhorn, which is the live album?
That's the one that I probably got the most. That was the first album I bought, and that was the album that they were touring when I first saw them live. Mm-hmm. And that was their classic sort of zoo set that they supported Salmonella Dub, where they did an hour set and played
four songs
or four songs or something.
And just fucking riffed the shit out of them.
And where the DJ came out and, you know, sort of tapped the MPC for 7 minutes, and then the trombonist came out. You know, they all sort of just wandered onto stage, and it was an amazing start to the set because it actually built and built and built and built and built. But if you'd never seen them before and didn't know what was going on, you're like, man, these guys are just so fucking casual. They're just sort of, they're not really coming in and like dropping it.
I can't really be fucked, eh?
Yeah, pretty much.
I've been smoking a lot of shit, eh? It's good. I reckon the Cowboys might get away with this game against the Storm. I know we don't talk sport in the after dark, but it's 10 minutes for somebody. Storm winger. And Cameron Smith's just being a niggling motherfucker. Get a shirt that fits you, you fat cunt.
You must be a little bit behind me because they've just awarded that as a try. So, No,
I think they've awarded it as a try, but they've also sent the dude.
Oh, they put him in the bin.
Off you go, buddy. Marika Correa will be with a little.
I'm going Dire Straits' first album. Dire Straits, which is just called Dire Straits, 1978.
Could you be any more white?
I possibly could be. Dire Straits was the first album, first tape I ever bought when I was a kid. Not this album, but I've always held a soft spot for him. I love his guitar. I know his voice isn't fantastic.
But it works for the purpose he uses it for. It's got,
yeah, it's, oh, it, he works within his limitations very well, I think. And he's a real storyteller, like almost in that old sort of, you know, sitting around a campfire tradition, you know.
He can be quite Dylan-esque in some contexts. Remember in Romeo and Juliet, for example, he's quite Dylan-esque in the way that he kind of goes off and talks about what he wants to talk about. He doesn't really worry about whether it fits the meter of the song.
I actually find their later stuff a bit too, I don't know whether poppy's the word.
When you say later, given the fact they haven't recorded anything since about, in the last 20 years.
Brothers in Arms. I'm not a massive fan of Brothers in Arms.
I'm not a massive, problem. I think as we discussed quite a while ago, the problem with all Dire Straits albums is that they have duds and good tracks on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like, you know, so On the Night or On Every Street, which is the sort of last two albums that they released as Dire Straits.
On Every Street was the live album, wasn't it?
No, Alchemy was the live album, I think. Was On Every Street the
On Every Street was the live album.
Maybe it was.
It was like in Amsterdam or something in about 93.
Had Calling Elvis and Heavy Fuel and
they were really just country rock songs.
Yeah.
That's really what they were. They should have been in Nashville playing that shit.
I think they were sort of, because they got that bit of popularity in the 80s, that I think that sort of drove their sound a little bit towards the mainstream. I wonder what they'd be like now.
The guitar sound from Money for Nothing sort of pops up in Heavy Fuel and Calling Elvis. I mean, I quite like Calling Elvis. I love the film clip for Calling Elvis, which is the Thunderbirds turning up in your bath sort of thing. It was ridiculous. But it is what it is.
I do like their older stuff. I like sort of Love Over Gold, Making Movies, Communicate, Dire Straits is my sort of area that I like. But I'm going to go Dire Straits. It's got my favourite Dire Straits song in it, so I decided to go with that one.
What?
Six Blade Knife.
Okay, then. Let's see how this turns out, folks. BJ's going old school.
Yeah. Well, every now and again, you got to go back to your roots, and wasn't always all hip-hop and beats for me, so I might as well. I am white, so I might as well be white.
Let's dig into the old stuff. Yeah. I mean, one of the ones I almost picked last week was around that vintage, but it would have been, it was 1977.
No, I imagine it has a lot more, well, maybe not a lot more long guitar solos, because guitar solos were sort of the thing for every band, whether you're pop or.
No, it was, would have been Nevermind the Bollocks.
Oh, okay.
It is the Sex Pistols, because that album is as an album, it's a fantastic album. It just is a statement end to end, 12 tracks. It's really good. So I'll keep that in my pocket for some time in the future. But it's interesting to say this music was coming out at the same time, because you think of that period in Britain, it was all about the Sex Pistols and the Jam and the Clash and the Damned and all these punk bands. But there was other stuff going on too, you know. There was, as you say, there's Dire Straits getting started. There's the early days of the new waves of British heavy metal, you know, like Judas Priest and fucking Motorhead and Iron Maiden and that are just starting up. The dying embers of bands like Queen and Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath are going on at the same time. So it's interesting how you remember times isn't actually
when did the British dance music sort of start to take off.
That was until late 80s. That was kind of a Manchester thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That was kind of, yeah, that was kind of late 80s in Manchester. Although, and prior to that, there was the Joy Division, New Order kind.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking of, that 24-hour party people. So that was
They weren't really, I guess they were a bit dance acts. Yeah, that was that was kind of mid-80s, early mid-80s. And then subsequent to that was the kind of rave scene.
Yeah.
Guru Josh.
So British music really had a lot going on around that time.
British music has always had a lot going on. That's the thing. Yeah. It's there's always been so much going on in that ridiculous little island.
Mm.
And yet they have a prime minister who fucked a pig.
And on that, I think we'll leave it. Oh, good night.
Bacon, bacon.
That is just a great way to finish. Oh, I have been loving. I am so glad. I've stopped recording, by the way. I'm so glad that I live in the age of Twitter.
Hasn't it been tremendous?
Have you? I don't know if you've
tremendous.
Have you seen the Kermit the Frog one?
I haven't. So the best part was the hashtag Bay of Pigs. Bay of Pigs just killed me. That was fucking hilarious.
Which is way better than Piggate. Who does Piggate? That's ridiculous.
Fucking gate. Stick a gate up your ass.
That's lazy.
But Bay of Pigs was the fucking funniest thing.
Oh, so they're relaunching the Muppets in the US at the moment, and one of the things that they've done is Miss Piggy has dumped Kermit the Frog. Kermit the Frog's now single, and so there's this awesome meme kicking around of Kermit the Frog on the phone on one half of the photo with David Cameron on the other going, "Do you love her? Do you really?" And then that was probably the best one I saw, but the second best one was a pub in London that had a sign out saying, "Our bacon sandwiches are now 100% David Cameron free."
The thing is that I can't believe there's a world in which you can live this shit down. But the upper class Tory cunts, they seem to be able to get away with this.
They just don't care, man.
They just expect this of them.
Jesus. And the stupid thing is like, because I was telling Vanessa and Ryan about it, because they hadn't, you know, they're just not politics people, so they just don't. And they're not on Twitter, so they just don't get this stuff.
This is the thing. If you weren't on Twitter, you wouldn't necessarily hear all this tremendous stuff.
No, because it's not something that's really on ABC radio.
No, it's been hard to explain.
Yeah.
David Cameron fighting off accusations that he fucked a dead pig's head.
But that Ryan said, did he come out and deny it? And I'm like, well, not really. He didn't deny it, but he because what their camp said was
the book has come out of the book that's been written was written by the former head of the fucking
the Tories basically
Tory party. It's come from a position of authority that this happened.
So he's come out and said we're not going to dignify the book with a comment, like we're not going to say anything, which is basically as good as saying, well, yes, it definitely happened, but we're just not going to say anything.
Yeah. It's not a no.
Yeah, that's right. It's like we're not going to admit that it happened, but so Chaz, do you still follow Chaz on Twitter?
Chaz.
From Perth, he's a burger.
Oh, he blocked me like 5 years ago.
Oh, really?
But I think he unblocked me recently because he popped up in my timeline recently.
Okay, so he's from the UK, and his thing was Cameron is a real sort of centrist guy, and with all the refugee stuff that's happening over there, his theory was that the right wingers have sort of been keeping this in their back pocket, and there might be a bit more of this sort of stuff. Enough that Cameron will have to, or someone will move on Cameron and they'll get a more right-wing leader.
they do that, they'll disappear because they'll.
Oh yeah. They'll well, that,
they, it'll be like Tony Abbott because I mean, although Turnbull's done fuck all different to as I was trying to point out to. Oh, Errol, actually, as it was, who have drunk all the Kool-Aid on it.
Yeah.
He's done nothing different apart from the, making some interesting noises about and some welcome noises about domestic violence, but he hasn't – he's restored a $100 million of the $300 million that Abbott cut. Mm. Nothing has changed. And Abbott has come out and said that recently. He said, like, nothing has actually changed. They're sending all the same messages, which says that what I was doing was right.
Mm. It won't. The PR will change, definitely. Like
the spin will. And also, I mean, I understand that Turnbull, even if he wanted to change, wouldn't, because right now he has to make sure his party don't freak out on him. Because they are freaking out at him anyway.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to inflame that by suddenly going, right, gay marriage for everyone and live here. And yeah, I understand.
What he will do is basically tell the fucking the loopy right to get fucked, you know, Bolton.
Well, I don't know if he will. I mean, they've told him to get fucked, so I don't know whether he needs to tell them to do anything.
Well, he won't go on is it Jones or Hadley? There's one of those shows
they've been obnoxious. So, but it's nice to see he's not looking to appease them.
I did love Hadley trying to get Morrison to swear on a Bible that he hadn't rolled precious? Abbott.
Isn't that precious?
And Morrison just
what
going,
"What fucking government do you think you are? You fucking dickhole."
Yeah. But did you see the swearing in? Did you see the photos of the swearing in of the ministry? They have to bring their own. They're allowed to bring their own Bible to swear in. And
yeah. Because when Ed Husic, when Gillard was in power, I think Ed Husic was a from Western Sydney was a minister, and he swore in the Quran because he's a Muslim.
Yeah, right.
Because he's from the part of not Croatia, but you know, slightly east of Croatia that's Muslim. It dates back to the fucking Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
When the Turks were in there. So he's a bloody mozo. And he swore on the Quran, which was kind of cool.
It was a bit scary, the amount of people in our government, in our ministry that have their own personal Bibles at home. I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
Well, you know, you live in Gladys Land.
Mm, that's true.
What's the point of having a Bible? I mean, have they ever been opened? Have they been opened? I mean, did you read these fucking things?
It looks like the cows are going to romp this
were
in.
You
so. In
a, were you of the generation where they used to give, like the Gideons used to turn up to high schools and give out free copies of the fucking New Testament?
Maybe.
Because I think they gave me one. I'm sure I've got one. And I read
New
Testament
mine.
And I went, this is bullshit.
I went to Sunday school when I was in primary school because my grandma still goes to church every week. But for her, I don't even think she believes in the religion. She just goes because it's
community.
It's the social.
Yeah, exactly right. And to be fair, that sounds like a good reason to, you know, turn up, hang out with people. I understand that community part of thing and having that we've lost religion and the results in us losing community, that's disappointing. But like I'd rather not have to believe in the bullshit, though. That would be good.
I've talked to her before about, you know, she's like, oh, I like this minister. And I'm like, okay, so what do you like him? Does he do good sermons? No, he's just not boring. it's like the church, the actual church part is something that you have to get through so you can have tea and cakes with your mates afterwards. And like, why don't you just all arrange to have tea and cakes?
Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it? just like, let's just leave out the fucking bothering of God and let's just chill.
All right. Netflix, I'm going to go and watch the end of this footy game.
Well, I'm just going to sit here and watch it anyway. I'm just going to turn the mic off.
Sounds good.
Sure, bro.
All right. Keep talk to you real. Later.